In Native American agricultural practices, the main crops are known as the Three Sisters. There's winter squash, maize, and climbing beans. And these three crops are planted together in clusters with the maize or the corn planted at the center. And then when the stalks get to about 6 inches tall, squash and bean seeds are alternated planting around the stalks. And the three crops, the three sisters, work together in a symbiotic relationship. The corn provides the structure for the beans to climb, so no need for poles. The beans provide the nitrogen to the soil that the other plants need. And the squash spreads along the ground, blocking sunlight, preventing weeds, keeping moisture in, and acting as a living mulch. Even the prickly hairs on the squash vines help to keep pests away. And together, these three provide great nutrition with complex carbohydrates, essential fatty acids, and all 9 essential amino acids. Each plant enables the others to become fruitful. The three sisters work together, offering what they have to strengthen the others and to be strengthened by them at the same time. Now, not all relationships are so beautiful and balanced and life-giving. If we think about other kinds of relationships, particularly ones that aren't family-centered, there's doctor-patient relationships, attorney-client, mechanic and car owner, landlord and tenant, and next-door neighbors. And these relationships are not always life-giving. But what happens if you're friends with one of the people in these kinds of relationships? Does that change things? I mean, sometimes adding friendship to the mix really complicates things, but chances are you'll get better service and can work out problems more easily if you are friends with the other one. That idea is at the heart of transforming partnerships. Kryn Van Tattenhove and Rob Mueller believe that we can best do mission together with others when we have a good relationship with them. Like the three sisters, partnership transforms us. It always transforms us, shaping our characters, our spirits, and our actions. And if we are not transformed, then what we have is not partnership. We have something else. Sharon George says, "Mission in partnership is a transformational adventure, a risk. There is no way to guarantee what will happen along the way to God's future." And this is what happens in the story from Mark's gospel. In the encounter between the Syrophoenician woman and Jesus, both are transformed. Jesus dismisses the woman and actually insults her because she is an immigrant. Jesus' ministry is supposed to be for the Jews, and she's not a Jew. But she won't let him go. She challenges Jesus and persuades him to change his mind. Her faith, the faith of a pagan woman, amazes him, and he is changed. At the beginning of the encounter, the two have a very different relationship. Perhaps more like a customer and a shop owner where someone has the right to refuse service. But in their interactions, their relationship changes from insider and outsider to partners. Even though this is a hard story, I love it for so many reasons. Here it reveals that the God that we worship, the God who calls us to follow, is a God who is willing to be transformed. When God, out of a desire to journey in union with humanity, became flesh and blood in Jesus Christ, God became open to experience a compassionate change of heart. There is no doubt that partnership is central to our faith. As we heard in Peter's conversion with Cornelius 2 weeks ago, change is hard. It is hard for us to understand what the early church was going through, the intense struggles that they went through as they began to open their doors to non-Jews. And in this encounter with the Syrophoenician woman, we see that Jesus struggled too. He was sent as the Messiah for the people of Israel, but that's not where the story ends. It's awfully easy from the comfort of our own privileged places to get all judgmental about this kind of stuff. Of course Jesus should free that poor child of the demon. Of course Jesus came to save more than just a small group. Of course the Gentiles are God's beloved children. But as one scholar challenges us, it is difficult to appreciate the intensity of the Jewish resistance to becoming an ecumenical church until we take a good look at our own churches and begin to wrestle with barriers, often invisible and unspoken, that continue to separate people. Once we look at the barriers that we have put up or inherited or knowingly or unknowingly benefited from, all of a sudden the struggles of the early church don't seem so strange and distant. In this gospel story, we see that God's reign is not limited to the people of Israel. Even though Jesus was trying to escape the crowd and was looking for more for retreat than to be interrupted by some pushy immigrant woman, he is transformed by the relationship that comes from their interaction. And that can happen for us too, if we're open to it. When a church decides to partner with its neighborhood, if it truly allows itself to listen and learn, then there is a great potential for transformation. The relationship that comes from that partnership can change the congregation and the community. The authors of Neighborhood Church suggest that there are five essential missional attitudes that contribute to healthy partnerships: respect, compassion, humility, observing and participating, and receiving and giving. To have a healthy partnership, there needs to be a posture of mutual respect. That is, we have to let go of our well-meaning, patronizing judgment about who needs who. Instead, we need to be willing to give and receive because everyone has something to give. We need to learn how to give, and we need to learn how to receive well. That is essential to preserving the dignity of all partners. When Jesus encountered the woman begging for her child, when he encountered someone other and foreign, he was transformed by that experience. That happened in the story last week of the woman at the well when barriers were broken down, and in the story of Peter and Cornelius, when Peter learned that God shows no partiality and there's no such thing as the other among God's children. It also happened with the people of Athens in the reading from Acts. Paul interacted with these foreigners with their strange religious practices, and he entered into relationship with them. And together they were transformed as he shared the story of Jesus. But that transformation cannot happen without trust. It takes knowing one another to establish trust, and then the transformation can happen. All congregations can benefit from transformational partnerships. Van Tattenhove and Mueller lay out five practices that are fundamental to the success of these partnerships. Listen together, especially to pains and frustrations, and then imagine a new future. Maintain an abundance mentality, recognizing resources that are already present. Don't let monetary concerns steer the boat. Forge agreements that respect the dignity of each partner and then review them regularly. And take time to play together. This is what we have tried to do with our covenant relationship with the Cristo congregation, the Spanish-speaking congregation that worships here on Sunday afternoons. When Pastor Waldo and leaders of Cristo approached us about renting space about 18 months ago, it soon became clear that we all wanted something more than landlord and tenant kind of relationship, like we do with most of the other rental groups that we have from the outside. We wanted this to be a relationship of trust and partnership. That's why we signed a covenant agreement instead of a rental contract. That's why we celebrated this relationship 1 year ago next week with worship and a great big fellowship meal full of song and laughter and really good food. But if we're honest, though, it's not all we hoped it would be. We still have a lot of room to grow in our relationship. The hope would be that we'd end up like the three sisters. The hope is that each congregation will enable the other to be fruitful, and that together we will work offering what we have to strengthen each other and be strengthened by one another. That means that both congregations will be changed by the other, because if we are not being transformed, then it is not really a partnership. The hope is that this will be a life-giving relationship and a transforming partnership. We've still got a lot of work to do on our partnership with Christo and with being open to others, but I want to end with a poem by Mickey Scottby Jones, who identifies herself as a justice doula. The poem is called Invitation to Brave Space, and it expresses what happens when we enter into these relationships, when trust is built, when we begin to collaborate, even when we don't always get it right. Here's her poem. Together, we will create brave space, because there is no such thing as safe space. We exist in the real world. We all carry scars, and we have all caused wounds. In this space, we seek to turn down the volume of the outside world. We amplify voices that fight to be heard elsewhere. We call each other to more truth and love. We have the right to start somewhere and continue to grow. We have the responsibility to examine what we think we know. We will not be perfect. This place will not be perfect. It will not always be what we wish it to be, but it will be our brave space together, and we will work on it side by side. Amen.